Welcome to Diplomacy, the podcast for communications in mergers and acquisitions, brought to you by Corporate Diplomat. With our guests, we will discuss how the financial, economic, political, and social context can actually impact the value created by a transaction. My name is Louis de Schalemer, and I will be your host. Welcome to Diplomacy, the podcast for communications in mergers and acquisitions. Our guest today is Laurens Hoekstra, Chief Strategy Officer with WIM Group in the Netherlands. And you have a quite a rich profile that we will be able to discuss. What is strategy? What is brand? And how does that make the difference in mergers and acquisitions? My name is Louis de Schalemer. I'm the host to this show. Laurens, welcome on board.
Thanks a lot, Louis.
Laurens, it is a tradition. It is my first question. I always kick up these podcast episodes with that number one question, the who or what has made the person you are today?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question to start with. I would say the first answer is, of course, my parents, how I grew up, the values that they instilled me. My father told me when the preschool teacher asked my dad what he wanted me to be later on, he said, Gochum. It's a money magic, that's not a good word, mm-hmm. but it's a good balance between IQ and EQ. But the other one is, in my younger years, I studied a lot, so I was not able to do what I wanted to do. So that made me as a person. So one time I thought, this will not be my life, so let's fight for it. And I did. And today I am where I am. So all barriers there are, you put them yourself. So if you take that away, you can achieve anything.
Wow, wonderful. Thank you for this opening, Laurens. I love to have a magician on board. I've never had one in my podcast, so welcome. You're the very first. You just mentioned the one buzzword, the values. So the values that you have received and that made the person who you are today. How do you see those values for a brand? So just to frame it, so you are the master or brand master, brand strategist. So if we kick off with the brand, so what makes those values of a brand, tangible, intangible, what really makes those values?
Yeah, of course, if you look to the values of brand, there are tangible values. But if you talk about brand, the intangibles make it not easy to convince people in organization, to convince board. If you talk to the measurable values, it's, of course, about the financial performance, the market share, the revenue, the profit margins, and so on. You can really calculate the value. But the intangible value is what you cannot grab. It's about the brand awareness, the brand loyalty, the perception of stakeholders. And as stated, that can be difficult to translate in a good way. And the complexity increased today with the change from shareholder economy to stakeholder economy. So the more complexity, the more the intangible value has the importance.
So what makes a good reputation if you have to balance for the organization, if you are exposed to stakeholder pressure, which is much more difficult to control, much more difficult to plan for than shareholder pressure? What makes a great reputation?
There are quite a lot of drivers, of course, if you look to reputation, like the quality, the customer centricity, the consistency, etc. But I think in today's world, with the increase of number of shareholders and the transparency it needs, you see that the relationship with all kinds of stakeholders, that's one. So positive relationships and really built on that. Second is the social responsibility. With the whole ECG and the importance of ECG and the reporting of ECG, I think that social responsibility and everything you do with it is an important driver for good reputation. And the third one, I would say crisis management, looking to the war and how companies act and react on it, but also the financial crisis and other things.
So how do you develop this value of the brand in terms of materialization. So you said there is the intangible part, there is the tangible part. So yeah. Who owns that brand? Who is responsible for that? Is that just the comms department or who else should be owning it from your experience as well?
I think you would say with all the digital revolutions we are still in that we all own the brand. Because if you look to the owners of the brand, yes, you can say that the company, the organization is the owner. And you can say, but today also consumers, customers has really impact on what you need or should do with the brand or your employees or shareholders and stakeholders. But saying that, I think that if you look to who is the owner of the brand, it's the company itself. And I think an important stakeholder there is CEO, owner of the brand, next to a department or a person who has the responsibility to support the organization to work with the brand.
The measurement of a brand value enough. So we have this value measurement, X million, X billion, and improvement. How much has the brand value gained? We know those listings, those rankings.
Yeah.
Are they relevant? How can we make them relevant?
If you look to the brand as itself, I think the importance of the brand as a value creation or the brand as a real company asset, such as finance or operations or et cetera, or HR. I think it's still not all organizations understand the importance of brand. And of course, an important question is why? Because it's about how do you translate the importance of a brand to C-level and how you make sure that you can organize it as a real strategic asset to create value. And then it's about how do you organize a brand.
It's an interesting one because indeed, we often hear how important the brand is for an organization, for a company. And yet there is very few companies who have a dedicated person or team who does nothing else than watching out for the brand. So yeah. When we see how many people other organizations employ for other assets, the brand itself, the brand protection, maintenance, and development, there's very little real resources allocated to that.
It's lucky that today we have brand managers because some years ago we didn't have any. So we have corporate brand managers today, but it is too less. I think it starts all with the curriculum of how the brand professionals are trained. It is still more a creative way of looking to brands and not the business administration part. So I think there's one. So I really would advise brand managers for the future, not only do the course of a brand manager from creative part, but also follow next to that also more a business administration course or training or minor. It is, of course, some organizations are not big enough. So it's about resource constraints. But the other hand, bigger organizations is also the understanding of brand and brand management. So again, how to translate the importance of brand and the way you organize it, that it is important. Because we know that the better a brand is organized, the better a brand manifests internally and externally. But it is still the less organized discipline in organizations. So what you see, the brand is organized now in silos. So we have a comms department, a marketing department, the brand is a bit with facilities, with HR. So everyone is doing a bit with it instead of organizing it as, in my words, as a supply chain. And so the importance of the brand, the way people are trained, how it is organized in the case of in silos or more centralized.
Is that when we go to our topic, my key topic, mergers and acquisitions? I assume and consider that you have been advising one or the other customer in terms of mergers and acquisitions. How do you get started when you have to get about the thinking of, do we keep the brand? Do we rebrand? Do we sunset the brand? How do you start your work as a strategist, particularly when you have to advise a customer?
Lucky is that today we are more involved in an earlier stage when there is a possible merger or acquisition. We also see that some of our clients ask us to make a roadmap for brand and M&A so that the brand people are involved in an earlier stage, the so-called brand in the war room. So that during the diligence, not only the financial fit is tested, but also the brand fit. So I think that's important. And then you can decide before M&A, the buyer, do they follow or is the strategy they go for an integration strategy for brands or a separation strategy? And if you know upfront the pluses and the minus, the arguments to do so, then you also can organize it during the M&A, how you want to be the brand integrated or separated. So it starts really to sit with the M&A people and the brand people together to set that strategy. So part of the deal making can be that you also sign off the brand strategy you follow, and that will make life easier.
Not too long ago, as a student, I think it was Philip Kotler who had initiated the thought of the house of brands. So a company that would accumulate multiple brands and use those, or the branded house, where basically you have a company that would sunset all other brands and just keep one brand. How has that evolved?
So there's still organizations are thinking about integration or separation. So it is not the case today. Now, today is the case due to ESG, for example, the role of the brand. It has today to people, the role the brand has also in politic discussion, that we see more and more in the house of brand construction. So to a monolithic brand approach. So the role of the corporate brand is changing, is more important. People want to see and to hear what the parent is behind the brands. So that is what we are seeing. It is not fully monolithic brand approach, but it is in between or more to the monolithic approach. And that's due to the circumstances we see out there. But again, the other side, you see an M&A company can still have a strategy first to have a house of brands and then change that over time. So again, there, the strategy about integration and separation to set that up front, that's important because it can change over time.
How difficult is it to actually rebrand a company? You just mentioned that you have a clear vision, you have to protect the buying of the mother company and the exposure is there. So how difficult is it to really change color, logo, name from an organization? And how risky is it?
We always say it is below the waterline what needs to be done. A lot of energy and focus is also from board in the strategy phase. So defining the purpose, also development of the logo, the visual identity. And we know if you spend €1 on the strategy and creation of a brand, in average, you have to pay €20 for the execution. But not a lot of companies know that. Why? Because it's silo organized. So it is very important, and that's always the first step with our clients, is to do a good analysis. And we call it an impact analysis. And what you do there, looking to the impact of a potential rebrand. So next to the strategy, integration, separation, the ambition of the change, is it evolutionary or is it revolutionary? We see, okay, what is the impact on the investment based on ambition? Do you have the people and do they have the capacity and the expertise? And how many hours do you need for implementing a new brand? And next to that, as part of that, we also look to how do you organize the brand. So it's nice to invest in a new brand, but the better is to organize the brand longer term so it will create value. And then, of course, the outcome is a decision document for the brand owner, as we mentioned in the beginning, a person who is responsible for the brand change, but also that this person has the mandate from the board to execute and come up with a good plan of approach.
That's an interesting one. So it's a question somehow about the governance to proceed. I like that one very much.
I mean, the governance for a project, it is you can make decision about integrated or separation strategy for the brand itself, but you can also make decision about a central approach or a decentral approach of a rebranding. You can imagine if you are a global company, you have to rebrand, that the governance of the project is key for success. Question is, how do you fund? Centrally, or do the opcos have to pay for themselves? Based on that decision, the complexity will increase or decrease. And then if you want to do the strategy and the first tactical part centrally and the rest needs to run decentrally, the grip on the project will be less. So then you need to create a toolbox to facilitate the organization. That's another approach if you do a more centralized project. So based on the governance model, again, central, decentral, is it top-down or is it more a community model? That has impact on how you run the project as such. And time is crucial. So you can do it in 1 month and you can execute in 5 years. 1 month is too quick, but 5 years can be too long, not only to have a too long period where you have to need the attention of the people on the project. And you know, if it takes too long, people will not be focused anymore. It will also cost you too much. And the impact of the rebrand will be less. Because if it takes 5 years or 2 years, in 2 years, you can make higher impact than in 5 years. So it, again, has a lot of arguments to do in a shorter period or longer period. For budget, you have or need to have.
You certainly have seen as well for this transition period, the underlining now member of or part of or group or whatever. So with a sublogo, when do you recommend using such a transition? Or is your experience that you would rather say, watch out using those transitions?
Yeah, it is, of course, a huge cost. So, I mean, the best advice is you only should do that if there is really, from a strategic point of view, you need to change to create something new, value or shareholder value. So there are a few you can mention. It can be an M&A. So it can be a spin-off, a splitting up of a company. So there's a strategic reason why you have to change or should change your name and also the brand. But it can be also repositioning of your company, going into new services or product portfolio. For example, Philips, from the fast moving to the healthcare. It can be that you are a local player in one country and you want to do your business internationally, or you have a bad reputation. And we have some examples. And we also see if a new CEO is coming in, they want to set their stamp. And I don't know if that is a good reason to change, but really there should be a strategic reason why you should change or change your brand.
Do I understand you well, Laurens, on this, that you say that brand should be something at least 50-50 rational and emotional? Or should it be more rational? Because a brand is highly emotional. We would usually say this is really the one thing that we attach our emotions to. And at the same time, you say this has to be strategic, very clear, and business-driven, value-driven. How do we manage that?
I mean, the starting point for a brand change, if it is emotional, it could be that the image is outdated. The end of the day, if your image is okay and people love your brand in one or the other way, they're willing to buy and pay a premium. If it is outdated, then you will lose clients, maybe. So there's always a business reason. You have your business strategy and brand should follow the business strategy. Next to the emotion, I fully agree with you. A brand should apply. I mean, some brands, it's a lifestyle. So a brand is really... And it starts internally, your employees. So it is emotion. But changing a brand is following the business strategy, and it should be a warm blanket over the organization. So it should work for you.
Laurens, I learned a lot in this conversation.
Thank you.
Let me maybe summarize the three important things that I picked up. The first one is, I think you have been very clear on that, how important it is to have a proper roadmap for M&A and really ensure that the brand is part of the war room, so that thoughts, even though not all of the decisions, but the thinking around a brand is part of the M&A journey. That's the first lesson I take away. The second one, maybe it's because you are based in the Netherlands, but you said brand changes have to happen below the waterline. So defining the purpose or redefining the purpose, redevelopment of the visuals and the actual tangible part of the brand has to be something that needs a lot of work below the radar. So when you get out with it, it surprises or it engages right away.
Yeah.
And that's an important one as well, because the question about do we keep the brand, do we drop the brand or sunset the brand in M&A is a critical one. So probably have a good answer right at the beginning where you say we keep the brand as long as it has a value in the market, something like that.
Yeah.
And then you change whenever you think it is appropriate to change or when the organization thinks it has to evolve. And the third element that I take out of our conversation here is the governance. The governance in terms of organizational structure to manage the brand and the mandate for the responsibility for the brand. So be it in the silo, be it central, be it what we mentioned. And secondly, to have this mandate so that you can develop the full support for the brand there where you do need it. So I think that's really this kind of governance that I take out of it. And probably in that governance, the most important one is that it supports the strategy or the business strategy.
Correct. And I think to add something to that, if you integrate also names, I mean, brand is the visual identity, but for example, a name, if you have an M&A, an example, we have an energy company in the Netherlands was bought by Vattenfall, so Nuon Vattenfall, and they wanted to change Nuon to Vattenfall. But Vattenfall is a B2B company and Nuon a B2C with 70% of their sales is door-to-door. So the biggest risk in the brand change was that customers would not buy and customers would go to another energy company. So to retain the clients, it was high priority in the brand change. By calculating that, what the value is, the brand manager was able to get enough budget for the marketing to show the world that Vattenfall was there. So really, the impact analysis will create also the arguments where you should invest and the tempi, how fast you can change the brand or not. Because if you do it too quick, people don't know your brand and they will not buy. So it needs time.
Very clear. I love that, Laurens. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts, for sharing your ideas and your experience with us today. I am looking forward to come and see you one of these days when I have to go up north there. Laurens Hoekstra, it was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Diplomacy. Please explore our website www.corporate-diplomat.com or our LinkedIn page. I hope you have enjoyed. Feel free to subscribe and hit the follow button. Have a great day.